I think it's going to be a blessing for all of us as we listen to Ken this morning and what he has to bring us. Ken's from Kenya. He's been here in the U.S. for a little less than a year. He's working in 2100 as a production affiliate, sort of as an intern basis. And at the point in his time here where he's trying to evaluate whether it's time to go back to Kenya or to continue here for a few more months and see what to do next. The way Ken got here, and he'll tell more of his story to us, but about a year ago, the incident that brings Ken to be with us was in a worship service on a Sunday morning about a year ago. It was the second anniversary of a church plant from Nairobi Chapel, I think. And he was there filming with his little camera. And he was standing in the back filming away and he, holding a very small camera like this, trying to keep it steady. And there's this big American guy standing next to him with his big camera, his big tripod. And here's Ken with his, and he says, I just looked over at this guy and started laughing and said, you know, when my camera grows up, I want it to be like that one. That guy was Nate Clark. And they got talking, and one thing led to another, and Nate and Ken figured out that Ken could come here to work at the NSC with 2100. So that's what brings Ken here, and Ken has a story today of his travels. Nasafiri means I am traveling, and so this is the story of his journey, a small part of his journey, but a very significant part in his life. So welcome, Ken.
Well, thank you all for coming. It's good to be here. I just thought I can share part of my journey through some pictures that I've taken over time, and hopefully that will be able to shed some light through the path that God has led me. I grew up in Nairobi, Kenya. I grew up in part of Kenya, part of Nairobi, called Isili. And Isili was like the hub for Somali refugees. So like really, it was really one of those poor neighborhoods, I think it needs money. I didn't carry my wallet. So I remember growing up in Isili and just seeing the poverty all around me. And I think at an early age, by the time I was 9, I just decided that I don't want to ever be poor in my life because of the poverty I'd seen around me. And I think by the time I was 10 years old, I already began experimenting, and Jim told me it's okay to say this, I began experimenting with weed and I was moving on to harder things. And my parents thought that it wasn't wise for me to continue living there, so they sent me to a boarding school that was about, I think, 350 miles from Nairobi. And I only got to come home, I think, twice a year for about 2 months. So at 10, I was already separated from my family. So that should be a picture of my family. I'm somewhere there. The handsome-looking young man here. So that's my family. And my father at that time was an alcoholic and a drunkard. And my mother had this strategy that every Sunday she'd invite the choir to come home and pray for her sick husband. So every single Sunday would have the choir coming home. And I think one Sunday my dad just felt like he had enough and he decided to go to church. And he went to church, and one thing led to another, and he became a believer. So at 12, my father led me to Christ. So my father, who used to be a drunkard now, was a firm Christian, and he led me to Christ. And he went on to become an Anglican pastor. I mean, total turnaround. So at 19, after I'd finished my primary school and my high school, I was looking for a college to go to, and I decided to go to Daystar. In Nairobi. But as luck would have had it, by then my father didn't have a job, so I couldn't go to college. And my friends and I formed a small IT startup company and decided to start doing websites for people. And I think at that time, with all the internet boom, it was a prime time to enter that business. I mean, we were making money. left, right, and center. And so my earlier dream of becoming as rich as I could was really happening. By the time I was 21, we got invited by the president of Kenya to go and receive an award at State House, which is our White House. And I knew everything was going to work out. I mean, 21, meeting the president of Kenya, I mean, everything was going on quite well. But with all these monies that are coming in, I became distant from my family and also distant from God. I think there's something that happens when you pursue money so much. I think it makes you numb to things around you, and especially if you want to pursue it at every cost, and that's what I decided that I really wanted. So after a while, I got a job in Uganda to go and work as an expatriate. And at that time, Uganda had a power crisis. So very good opportunity to enter the energy business at that time. So we began supplying alternative energy to Uganda, which had a power crisis because of the receding waters in Lake Victoria. Now, Uganda is on the west of Kenya. So you got Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, and Sudan. So Uganda is on the west of Kenya. So while in Uganda, I even became more distant from my family and God. I mean, I stopped becoming a believer. I didn't see any purpose of being a Christian. It didn't make sense to me. But in Uganda, being far from home and not having friends, I decided one time to go to church, to go to Kampala Pentecostal Church. Because there's only so much you can do when you're an expatriate in a foreign country. You can only go out so much. At some point, you get bored. And so I decided to go to church one Sunday to just pass time. So I went to Kampala Pentecostal Church, and they had an amazing media setup. They had a three-camera job. I think the guys at 2100 can understand this. So they had these three cameras that were zooming onto the speaker, and this was projected behind the screen. And I thought, that's really cool. So after church, I went and talked to one of the guys in the media team and asked him, how can I join the media team? Well, he told me, you have to join a life group. Then I didn't know what that was. He told me, a life group meets every Wednesday. Like, that's okay. So I don't have to be a believer to join the life group. Like, no, you don't have to be a believer. You can just join it. But you have to attend it every Wednesday. But that's okay. For 30 minutes, I can give 30 minutes on my Wednesdays to operate the cameras. So I joined the life group, and my first time there, I think I was just thinking 30 more minutes to go. And by the end of the life group meeting, I didn't contribute or I didn't like even listen to anything. I drifted away, but I knew I needed to sit there in order to work on the cameras on Sunday. So I did that for a couple of months, and one day when I was in the life group, something just happened. I began listening in, and I just realized that through my life, I'd carried so much bitterness and anger, and I think just angry at seeing the poverty and injustice around me. And me moving away from Christianity was because of that. And I began talking to people in my life group, and I committed my life back to Christ. But it's also in Uganda that I began seeing so much poverty again in my life. I mean, in Nairobi, you have to go searching to see the slums. In Kampala, everywhere I stayed, no matter how affluent it was, there was always a slum right behind me. That was so amazing. I mean, from my kitchen window, I could always see a slum behind me. There was always a small slum next where I was staying. So one day I was walking downtown. I was in a motorcycle taxi. They're called Boda Bodas in Uganda, downtown Kampala. And I saw this kid who was about this high, maybe about four years old. Walking stark naked on the streets, like State Street, one of the busiest streets there. But the funniest thing was that no one seemed to notice this kid. Everyone was just passing this kid. So I jumped off the border and I began taking pictures of this kid. And over a series of shots, I saw this kid picking up a cigarette butt, and he was about to smoke it. And I made one of those selfish prayers that that sometimes Matt Kirk makes. I said, oh God, make this kid turn and look at me. So I ran behind the kid and I was crouching and just kept on praying. I mean, a very selfish prayer as a photographer. So after a while, this kid turned and looked at me straight, and that's that shot. And I took more shots, and I went to church. I was attending the evening service then. One of my friends saw this picture, and I think something struck her. I was supposed to meet with her after church to go for coffee, but after church I couldn't find her. I tried calling her on her mobile phone, what we call cell phones here, and I couldn't get her on her mobile. And later on, when I finally connected with her, she told me she couldn't stay in church. She had decided to go and get clothes for this kid. And I thought, if one of my pictures can make someone do this, to go and help someone else, I want to do this. And I was trying to gauge what to do. I had this job which was paying me well. It was a World Bank funded project. Money wasn't a thing. I mean, I was being paid well. And if I decided to go and work in the slums of Kampala, that has an implication of how much money I could earn. While I was thinking about that, I saw this picture of this bird from my kitchen window, and it was as if the bird was praying. It was like bowing down, and I began praying that, oh God, make the bird fly away. And I think in the next shot, all right, that always happens. And I think in the next shot, I got the bird flying away. And at that time, something just clicked in my mind, and I decided I'd quit my job and go and work in the slums. A very emotional decision. I wouldn't advise anyone to do that at this time. And I began working in the slums in Kampala, and one thing led to another. I went to work in Kibera slum in Nairobi. And during that time, I decided to take 1 year break from work to stop seeking active employment, to stop earning money for 1 year, to take a break. Because I felt like this money that I was seeking so much had really taken me so far from my family. So I decided I'd work in the slums for 1 year and also volunteer at one of the Nairobi chapel church plants called Mavuno, which means harvest in Swahili. During my time in the slums, I began working with the youth in the slums, showing them how to tell their stories using video. And I worked with a group of youth who about, I think about 10 of them, between 13 and 19, and I taught them how to tell stories, their own stories. So one of the documentaries they did was called Living in the Bucket, which is basically them showing poor sanitation from their perspective, the poor sanitation that that surrounds them. World Bank Africa saw the documentary last year and decided to put them up in a contest. And last year, these kids from Kibera is one of the slums in Nairobi that's within a square mile of 1.6 square miles, and it has about 1 million people, so it's very densely populated. So these kids from this slum did this documentary, and they won the best documentary of the year last year. And I began thinking that they're able to do that because somebody worked with them, somebody helped them. So earlier on, I used to think that if you're poor, you're poor because you're lazy, you're poor because you just want to be poor. But after being in the slums, I just realized that most of the people who are in the slums are not poor because they want to be poor. They're not there because they really desire to be there. So in 2007, we had a general election in Kenya. And at that time, the opposition and the main party couldn't agree, and the government, rather, couldn't agree on who had won the elections. I mean, almost the similar thing that's happening in Iran. And chaos ensued. We had our post-election violence. And the police would come to the slums where I'd work, and they'd do target practice with the people in the slums, because the people in the slums were anti-government. One of the most painful things was getting a call from one of the youth in the picture, I think this guy here, it's called Ken, and he just asked me, can you come here and just take pictures of this? I mean, I'm not a journalist, but he just wanted me to go there and to be there with them. And I made a decision to go in the slums and just be with them during this time. So it was very painful to be there and see police doing target practice with people that say, hey, that guy there wearing blue like Jim, let's take him out. And just being there and seeing all that happening was really painful. So this next picture, maybe I should just So this next picture is from that. So the police would come into the slums. So the slum is a bit down there. The railway line is raised. And these people would come and fight with the police. And most of the people in the slums didn't have guns and all, so they had sticks and stones to protect them. The saddest thing that happened at that time in Kenya was that the church distanced itself from what was happening. The church was just silent. I think maybe the church felt it was safer to be neutral and not say anything. But what the rest of the population read was that the church didn't care. Eventually, the two warring parties decided on a power argument, and we got peace in Kenya. Pastor Oscar from Nairobi Chapel and a group of other pastors decided to go around the country to ask for forgiveness from the Kenyan people because the church had failed them. And this next picture is from that. So the people in the picture, this lady here, she's a refugee in her own country. They're called internally displaced people. So when you are evicted from Wisconsin, you're told that you didn't grow up here, go back to where you're from, and you don't have anywhere else to go, you become an IDP. So most of these people in these pictures are IDPs. That's another IDP. The one thing which I've learned from my picture, from the places I've gone and the places I've been, is that the times God allows you to see things at times which are very painful, which you can't comprehend. You can't understand why somebody would just be used as a target practice. But I've also seen through my pictures God coming through and healing those people, God coming through and showing himself strong, you know. Some of those pictures I've taken in my life, which I've shared with you, have been very painful. But for me, they've acted as some sort of beacon, some sort of map for me that shows me where God has removed me from and maybe where God is still calling me to go and work. I think in Christianity, one of those things is the cross. The cross is one of those painful things that that shows the price that God's Son paid for us. I don't know what in your life would compare to the cross or some of these pictures. But my encouragement for us today is that even those things which are painful sometimes in our life that we don't like going back to look at times God can still use that. And that's the end of my presentation. Mm-hmm.